Have you been using Mint to manage your finances? First, you probably know the bad news. Mint has shut down. But here's the good news. There is a better alternative. Monarch Money. That's right. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. I have been using Monarch Money for over a year now, and it makes my weekly money dates so much easier and a lot less stressful. I tried all of the other personal finance apps, but they just didn't work for me. I love Monarch because I can see exactly where my money is going and track my goals all at the same time. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, your investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Monarch has a tool that also lets you easily import your data from Mint so you can keep all of your tags and categories. And unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, very intuitive design makes it so easy to set up, customize, and use. And one of the features I love most is Monarch has built-in features to collaborate with your partner, your family, or your financial advisor. You can invite them to your account at no extra cost. They get their own login, and you can have a joint view of your finances. Monarch is also the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up automatic rules for transactions. You can go to town with Monarch. Plus, they have ad-free privacy you can trust. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of the show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
For New Year's, we compared the top five New Year's resolutions with the impact that money plays, and emotional health was one of them. And it was 73 to 75% between there said, I would, if my finances were better, I would feel better emotionally, right?
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Everyone's Talking Money. I am your host, Shauna Game. And on this show, my friend, we don't just talk about the how-tos of money. We also dive into the emotions, that stuff that keeps you up at night and gets in the way of reaching your goals. That leads us into today's episode. We throw around words like financial literacy, but what does that really mean? If you're anything like me, you didn't grow up learning about money in school, and what your parents taught you, well, my guess is you still had many questions when you got to the big bad real world. So you're left to just figure out how to money on your own, stumbling through paying off debt, saving money, investing. And so money could feel very overwhelming. But is money really that complicated after all? Our guest, Vince Shorb, founder of National Financial Educators Council, says that the biggest misconception about money is that it's complicated. And if we at least learn the basics, we'll do pretty well. So in this episode, Vince is sharing what it means to be financially literate. And don't worry if you're still learning about money, we all are. And why it's so important that you teach your kids about money from an early age so we can all collectively change financial literacy for future generations. But before we get into the episode, this show is an independent podcast, and I rely on your support to help it continue to stay afloat and grow in the future. Two ways you can support the show: One is leaving a review in Apple Podcasts. I've got a link right in the show notes. And the second is just sharing your favorite episodes with your network and continuing to spread the word. All right, let's start talking about this thing called financial literacy. We're talking about financial literacy. And, you know, this was a topic that my parents didn't really talk about when I was growing up, despite the fact that my dad had been in the financial industry most of his career. We never talked about how to budget. We never talked about how to save money, how to start investing, like all of these topics. We just didn't have these conversations about. And I think now, if I didn't have those conversations and my parent was actually in the financial industry, right? We know that most people aren't having these types of conversations. They're just not happening. And so, you know, we bring up this term financially illiterate. And I want to think about how do we begin to approach this idea of becoming financially literate if we grew up in situations where money was just not talked about, right? How do we actually get to the core of being financially literate?
Yeah, it's an interesting background you had, and you know, different parents have different styles of the way they communicate. I always encourage parents to communicate because a lot of people go out on their own for the first time and they make mistakes. They don't know what's going on. You learn the hard way. And that's really the most common teaching method of finance out there, it seems like. So I definitely understand. And you know, for a lot of people, it seems overwhelming, especially when you come out and you make initial mistakes. It seems almost depressing to think about when you understand what things cost, what you're making, and you know, just this few hours of work might pay for a dinner and a movie out, possibly.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
If you're very lucky and maybe eating very, very cheap and going to the dollar theater, which I used to do back in the day. But you know, I think there's a few approaches, right? I think for the people that are feeling that way, you can dip your toe in. And how you dip your toe into finding people like you, watching these shows, getting a sense of relationship and getting a overview of these different topics, finding your interest, being more in a looser education setting, which I think is an incredible way to learn these days. We're incredibly blessed with all these options and shows like yours, just reaching people that typically have not had that, right? And then some people want to take it deeper, and you can learn different methods, research on the internet, talk to people, hire a coach or consultant. You can, you know, read more books and so forth. So you can take that education deeper levels. And I always encourage people to one of two things, either find the thing that they really love to learn about money, right? Because we always need to learn and dive in there. It doesn't matter if you're not, let's say you like real estate investing and you're nowhere near that potential, you don't have money, your credit's bad, you're in debt. But if you enjoy it, you want to, you enjoy those things on HGTV, dive into that, right? And the spillover effect is like, okay, hey, I need to improve my credit, I need to do this. And that motivator could be a great force for that. The other way is, oftentimes people have upcoming life events that they just need to focus on. And sometimes you just got to grin and bear it. Hey, I'm going to have a child. I need to make sure I'm earning more or reduce my debt so I can afford this child. So, there's one of two ways, the fun and entry way or the, right. Hey, I'm under pressure. I need to make this happen.
So how do we describe what it means to be financially literate? Like, is there a concise definition?
There's not, but I think the actual definition would be having content knowledge on subject matter, right? I'm literate on finances. Now, do I think somebody will be better off financially by having knowledge? Yes and no. There's a lot of people that know how to have good credit that don't have good credit. There's a lot of people that know how to budget that don't have a budget. There's a lot of people that know they should invest early that aren't investing early. So literacy is one aspect. We like to use a broader definition here at the National Financial Educators Council, which includes behaviors, confidence in being able to implement those decisions, some resiliency when things turn against you, building team members and having a plan, having that motivating factors that can actually continue that. So we look at it more holistically and broader. So that's how we define financial literacy.
I want to get this stat right. I believe CNBC, they had an article out last year, and it said that 90% of Americans say money impacts their stress level. And I'm sure this is happening worldwide, that this is not just a US-based phenomenon here. What do you think the connection is between, or is there a connection between a lack of financial literacy and our money stress levels? Do those things go together, or is the high number of money stress that we're all feeling, is that just a state of everything's costing more, like just a state of life that we're in?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a direct connection. And I think money spills over to many other areas besides stress as well. We put out a study for New Year's. We compared the top five New Year's resolutions with the impact that money plays, and emotional health was one of them. And it was 73 to 75% between there said, I would, if my finances were better, I would feel better emotionally, right? American Psychological Association puts out top stressors. They do this every few years. 70 to 75% typically in any given year say money's the leading cause of stress in their life. So that data you have, I think, is right on point with that. And I've been there, right? I think most people have been there. When it's impacting your basic human needs, you know, looking at your security, your housing, your ability to get food, your ability to drive a place to get to a job, when it impacts your relationships, right? When there's some arguments and fights in relationships, or not able to go out after months and months and staying at home, or things get tired. It even impacts, you know, just how you feel about yourself, especially with social media. Everybody looks like they're living a millionaire lifestyle. I mean, everybody's looking good out there, you know, doing all these cool things, but the reality is we only see that aspect. So, you know, just from a behavioral finance perspective, humans feel we deserve what others have. So that's driving the stress levels up. So I think if we look at the hierarchy of human needs, the first three levels, money's impacting very seriously and stress. Yeah, I think it just has that effect where it's not only just in this one contained area, it's you know, across all areas of a person's life, which is sad and scary, and even more of a encouragement for parents and schools to start teaching kids about money.
Yeah, so thinking about that, I know there's been a lot of progress with states requiring financial literacy in high school and really pushing for students to be more financially literate. But I think there's still, I think you would agree, because this is what you do, there's still a lot more work to be done.
Yeah.
What does the future look like when it comes to our kids learning about money? Are they going to have it better than we have?
I hope so. Unfortunately, I just did a comparison of transcripts from my transcript in 1991 with a person from our youth advisory board from 2023. Now, he's a little smarter than me. Took a little more advanced class in math and science, but otherwise exactly identical subjects, exactly identical. And you can't tell me nothing's changed between 1991 when the first website came online, August 1991, 2 months after I graduated, and today. It's absolutely insanity that it's not being taught. And even the states that do have it, we say every state fails because it doesn't even meet the minimum education standards required by other subjects. You know, if you're teaching math or science or English, you have to have a trained teacher. They've went to school for 15, 18 years to get that. They'll throw a math teacher to teach personal finance, which you and I know it's completely different. Math is 1 + 1 = 2. You know, personal finances, different goals, different dreams, different situation, different habits. Their lack of funding, it lacks the time and rigor. You know, the most comprehensive school system has a half a year or one semester of personal finance. Imagine trying to speak a foreign language or do really learn anything vital. So I think there's a ton of room for improvement. So we're, you know, I always like to say this. I'm very appreciative of those that are leading the efforts and the push to get personal finance in schools. Thank you for getting the toe in the door. And now it's time we kick the door open. It's ridiculous. We're teaching subjects we've been teaching for the last 100 years that aren't helping our kids live a better, healthier, happier, healthier life. A huge focus on math and science, which benefits less than 10% of people that get STEM jobs. And the rest of 90% are like me going, why am I learning this? It's ridiculous. Teach me about money. Teach me something useful. So I think there's a long way to go. I want to be positive about the momentum. But I think, hey, we need to look at the, you know, I think there needs to be immediate change like we did when we went to the moon back in the day. We need to get this in as quickly as possible so these kids are protected, so they can live a happier, healthier, better life than this last generation. And sadly, the way things are right now, I don't think it's shaping up that way. And I think through education, we can turn that tide.
It's interesting, Vince, because I spent 10 plus years teaching at a university in Los Angeles, and I taught financial literacy. And when I was hired, they were like, there's no syllabus, just come in and teach what you want. So, you know, I was like, okay, well, let me teach what I think I would have needed to know as, you know, an 18 plus year old in college. And so many of the students were first generation, so they would learn and then they would go home and they would teach it to their parents and their aunts and their, you know, siblings. And so it was really great. And I, you know, I went to the university one day and I was like, this is working. Like, this is helping so many people in a very small way. But, you know, let's make like a one credit course that everybody has to take, super easy. And at least we can get people like to have some sort of money foundation. And, you know, with universities, as with most school systems, there's politics and all sorts of things go on. And that never happened. And it made me so angry. It's one of the reasons I started this podcast, because I thought, you know, where are these kids going to learn anything about this? They're just going to be out in the world with student loan debt and trying to figure this all out. And, you know, when you talk about that, schools are just not even the ones teaching financial literacy are not teaching what we really need to know. It's just, I don't understand what's going to have to change in order to make this a priority, because these numbers about stress and even things like suicide and depression about money, it's not getting any better.
True. I appreciate efforts with the schools. And yeah, your experience, we've seen that too, where it works backwards. The kids are educating the parents. And, you know, I think that's the beauty of finance. And again, that's why I'm very appreciative of people like you that are out there bringing this, because you help one person, right? And going back to that concept of the spillover effect, we talked about it in the negative way, but the positive way, you just described perfectly. Hey, you empower one person within a family. They're educating other members of their family. Plus, also, they're in a position they can help other members of the family, right? And now you have a family and maybe some friends and so forth that are now more empowered. And then that can spread to the community. I remember when I was young, I had some good success with money and investing early. I made some dumb mistakes later that cost me, lived through that time. But, you know, the thing I love the most is, you know, people were coming to me asking for help and support and guidance, because there wasn't anything out there really. So, again, I think that's the beauty of today, where you're able to take your passion for teaching in a school and bring it to the mass. I know you're reaching a ton of people nowadays, and that's awesome. You have a great following. And, you know, that's what we need to find, those educators. I have a handful of educators that stand out my whole career through high school and college, where I'm like, man, Mr. Abbott, he was awesome, right? And I still remember from name, and I still remember the lessons they shared. And the beauty is, today we have access to people that align with our personality. We can go, you know, person to person, find that person aligns in that style that we like to learn in. So I'm glad, you know, you went from a classroom where you're making a huge impact to this, where you're making huge impact, but just able to reach people probably around the world, not just in the U.S., around the world with your message. So again, appreciative of your efforts.
So let's talk about what kids need to know. You know, so many of the listeners are in that phase where they're having kids, or maybe they have young kids. What can they teach about money to their kids, even from a really early age, to start these conversations and to, you know, make money a topic that isn't so scary and fearful?
Yeah. And I think it's a practice. You know, when my dad taught me to drive, he took me to wide open parking lot, you know, turn on the car, turn off, put your foot on the brake, don't put on the gas, keep your foot off the gas. Okay, go a little, now put it back on. But I still remember back then, even I'd get 10, 20 feet within a light pole and my hands sweaty, I clam up, I tense up, right? And yet we throw kids out there. So for parents teaching kids, I think it's vital. It starts young. We can use teachable moments when you're shopping, especially, you know, let's say elementary school kids, teachable moments, comparison shopping, teaching them these basics, why you're doing certain things, bringing them into the bank, bringing them into your tax planner. They may not get it, but it's important for that exposure. With young kids, I'm a big believer in chores, so they're developing a strong work ethic early, and not only chores to earn money for them, but each month parents sit down and have them contribute to the household expenses. So maybe you can pay them a little more, okay. And then they're contributing to house. You know, we could get more sophisticated later, but you know, initially it's the visual things that they can see, the house, the car, et cetera. And later we can get the electricity, the gas. There's some fun games like you can play with kids where it's, hey, let's compare last month's electricity bill with this month or last year's with this year's and see if we can cut it down 10%. So we can make some good games with that as well. So with kids, it's about developing positive habits and behaviors. Brown University points to work ethic habits forming by age 9. They did a study of 50,000 youth, one of the most comprehensive studies I've seen. So it starts early. And parents, we need to remember, advertisers are marketing to your kids very sophisticated early on. They're getting influenced by social media, their peers. It's important. In the teen years, really, I think that shifts to life stage preparation. Although we're still trying to enlist those strong habits, preparing them for those near-term life events. One you mentioned is, hey, how to pay for school, right? Should I take out $200,000 in debt or should I find another solution? You know, moving out on your own, all right? When I moved out, I had some knowledge of money, but I didn't realize, hey, you need a deposit for gas and cable and all that stuff. So, you know, you learn, you know, very quickly and have to pick up extra shifts to pay for that. You know, how to manage your money as far as bank account and credit, right? My first credit card, I think it was $8,000 or $12,000, and I was a busboy and waiter. I don't know if I made that a year, but I got an $8,000 to $12,000 credit card. So, you know, I think although we're always focused on the behaviors and habits, again, prepping those high school students for those life events, I think is critical. You could do it at home where there's many courses, classes, workshops out there and available for parents as well that are looking for that added support.
And how do you, as a parent, get past your own negative beliefs or thoughts about money to make sure that you don't pass that along or project that on your kids when you're talking about money?
Yeah, that is tough. And it is challenging. You know, it's when we dislike something, you can hide it so much. But kids can sit, and kids are sharp. Even young kids, they pick up, hey, something's going on here. Did I do it? You know, what's going on? So they can pick that up at a young age. And that is difficult to do. And it may not, you know, be something you hide. It may be something you discuss. Hey, I'm upset because I've been paying this credit card bill and it's not going down. The interest rates just went up. And I'm upset because I got passed up for a job increase or a pay increase. You know, so even sharing those things, but again, it puts parents, sometimes they feel at a vulnerable position. But I think in reality, when you can share those types of, and you don't have to share the negative only, you can share the positive and try to balance it out. But I think it's hard for humans in general to hide their emotions. So if you're not good at faking and hiding that, there's another alternative for you, which is, hey, just saying, hey, this is why I'm upset. Let's talk about it. Here's what I'm going to do. And I'll report back in a few months. And I think too, even doing that, it could provide some accountability. Right? Hey, kids, followed that. I transferred the money to a zero interest credit card. Now it's being paid down. So we can showcase lessons, but that is a big challenge. And I'm hoping to give some people an alternative option out there.
So just having the conversations are important, even if you feel messy on your end. I think it's tricky because a lot of people who have sent in questions for the show over the years have said it wasn't something my parents said, it's what they didn't say to me. And, you know, all of these, you know, unspoken messages just kind of are floating in my head, and it makes me doubt my ability to handle money, or, you know, so many different things. And so I think, you know, one of the reasons we named the show Everyone's Talking Money is to be able to have these conversations, even if you are shaky and, you know, things don't feel quite natural to you. It's at least a start in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think through conversation as well, we learn, right? We're processing and we're getting out of our headspace, right? And I'm a big believer in communicating about money, but also writing things about money, right? So anytime we get out of our own head and worries and so forth, I think it's a good thing, therapeutic, but also it often reveals solutions that you may be missing just because the emotion, the stress, and all the other things we chatted about are influencing the way you're thinking at that moment.
Life does not happen biweekly, so why should your payday? The money you earn can be in your hands today with Earnin. Earnin, it's an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you can access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Listen, the money you get from Earnin, it could do a lot of things. Maybe you spend it on a gift for someone special in your life, or in my case, an unexpected and very expensive trip to the vet for my pup Winnie, or maybe you use the money towards your upcoming rent payment. There are lots of ways the Earnin money could go to use. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability, security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin, T-A-L-K-I-N, money, under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin, money, under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
All right, Vince, it is time to play Your Relationship with Money is Game. First question. If you had to describe your relationship with money as a type of food, what would it be?
Well, I would say more of a steak variety. You know, sometimes you get a there's so many different tastes of steak, the way it's cooked, the cut of beef and everything. And I think it goes to changing times, whether it be economic times change, whether it be your situation changes, opportunities change. You know, sometimes you chew on a nice, moist, you know, easy to chew on piece of steak. Other times you really got to cut that knife in there and really grind down. So, you know, money, I think, is very similar. It changes over time, and what we need to tackle on a daily basis is very similar. So if it was a food, I would say steak.
All right. What is your biggest money splurge that you are never giving up?
You know, I'm quite frugal. I enjoy that. But I do, you know, so I've always kept a low overhead. My money splurge, I think, more come from investment into business. In investments, I enjoy that. I'll take risks that I want in other areas of my life. From a fun perspective, I do like to travel and I do like a good restaurant. So, you know, I try to keep the travel cost to a minimum, but I do go out for a nice steak every once in a while. I enjoy a nice glass of whiskey with that.
I see you've got a bunch of books on your bookshelf behind you. If you could read only one money book for the rest of your life, what would it be?
You know, I have to go back to my old school, Kiyosaki, which was cash flow quadrant. I read all of them, but cash flow quadrant, that was my first where I was like, ah, you know, I had that aha moment. And I've probably read better books and so forth since then, but you know, I just got to go back to the old school book that kind of really stimulated me down this path of entrepreneurship and real estate. So, yeah.
Tell me about the inner world of your money thoughts. Is there a central theme or a central thought that plays kind of on repeat for you about money?
Yeah. How do I grow? How do I limit my risk? And how do I help people? I think, money's a tool for positive change. And I always want to grow it to gain power, to gain influence, to make a better world for not only myself, my family, my loved ones, but also the community. And I think growth is a key to that. And watching out, you know, there's risks out there. I'm risk averse and when I don't have control of situations. So, you know, hey, how do I grow and limit my risk? That's a daily thought for me.
All right. Last question. What's one money secret you've never shared or you don't share often that you want to come clean on?
Money. So, you know, I talk about money all the time. I try to share all my secrets, but I would say, you know, I think, one that I did early and, I started early as far as investing. Now I made some mistakes, right? And made some errors. But I think at a young age, you can recover. So if you get educated on a topic and you have a certain level of expertise there, I think, hey, it's okay to take some higher level of risk as long as you built up that resiliency as well to recover from that, not only emotionally, but also financially.
From Foreign Policy, I'm Rena Ninen, the host of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women. Over the past few years, we've looked at how women around the world are changing societal norms to increase their economic power. This season, we're focusing completely on girls, how they're pushing for a brighter, more powerful future, and what the rest of us can do to set them up for success. Join us for stories about girl power, young women who are fighting for change, to give themselves a chance to live a life of their own choosing. That's season 6 of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, wherever you get your podcasts.
Talking about money is hard. You know this already. All over the world, people are taught to never talk about money, politics, sex, or religion in polite company. On 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meeting from executive producers Chip and Joanna Gaines, host and financial conversationalist Carl Richards, we'll remove money from that list by having frank, funny, and often difficult conversations about money, the kind we're all told not to have, with guests from all walks of life. In each episode, Carl will invite a new guest to answer the question, what does money mean to you? Their answers will reveal much more than their attitudes about money, spanning revelations about identity, community, faith, family, and the true meaning of wealth. Tune in to hear deep conversations about money and the meaning it holds in our lives. You can find 50 Fires on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Karina Bemisdurfer, host of Morning Cup of Murder, your daily true crime podcast. Yes, you heard me right, daily true crime. Every day, Morning Cup of Murder tells you a straightforward, short-form story about murder, true crime, cold cases, disappearances, serial killers, cults, and more. And I do that all in under 15 minutes. With over 3 years of stories and over 20 million downloads, the Morning Cup of Murder podcast has become a staple of so many people's daily routines. So why not add it to yours? Stream Morning Cup of Murder everywhere you listen to podcasts. And remember, stay safe.
So I'm curious, because you play in this world all day, if there are any common themes or most kind of misunderstood topics around money that come up? Are there things that just stump us?
You know, I think the biggest misconception about money is that it's very complicated, right? I think, you know, if we look at the basics, right, and just break it down to the basics, we need to earn some money, right? We have expenses that are just part of life that we have to pay. But the main goal is the ability to save, right? And I think if we can focus people on, hey, just are you able to save on a monthly basis on each month? if you're able to get to that point, we're in a good stage, right? Yeah, now we get into investments and yeah, in credit and interest rates and impact your debt load. Yeah, you can do these things here. Yeah, skill development impacts your income and there's other opportunities. But if we could just break it down to simplify it, I think that demystifies it and it encourages people to move forward. I think a lot of people get caught up because they see all these things on things they should be doing, you know, work on this, work on that. But let's just break it down to the very basic structure. And I always encourage people to tackle those things that they either feel motivated for at the time or that's most important and urgent in their life, right? And just getting something on a regular calendar. You know, we spend 40, I'm sure you spend a lot more time than 40 hours a week working, myself too, 60, 70 most weeks. A lot of people there, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours as well. And, you know, they spend all this time working to earn money, yet very little time on their personal finances. So I'm always, when I have conversation with people, like, yeah, how much time do you spend working a month, right? You know, 160 hours. Okay. How much time do you spend on your personal finances? You know, I do check my credit cards and my bank account at the end of the month. So about a half hour. It's like you just put all that time into earning money and nothing into the back end that can really help you achieve some more security and freedom. So I think that's a aha moment for them as well.
Is there a certain amount of time we should be spending on our money?
Yeah, everybody's different. You know, I think if you're in, and also there's urgency levels too, you know, hey, if you're in a situation where you don't have emergency money, you're in heavy debt, you're worried about keeping a roof over your head or food in your kid's mouth, that's urgent time. We need to spend a lot of time focused on money, whether it be working, cutting expenses. We need to really prioritize that, forget about that outside world, and really focus so you're secure, your family's secure in that. You know, once you get above that, where you have some emergency money, debts paid, and maybe you're saving, you know, for investing, it's not as urgent, you know, but a lot of people have goals as far as when they want to retire and so forth. So I think making sure that you have a plan in place to determine how much you should work on your money. You know, if you want to retire in 5 years, you don't have any money saved, now we need to move. If you want to retire in 50 years, you're able to save a couple hundred bucks a month, hey, you might be able to chill and relax and you know, live a you know, very relaxed lifestyle and put in a couple hours a month toward money. So, you know, the unique thing that I've heard on your show quite a bit is that everybody's different. We all have different goals. We all have different dreams. We're all in different situations. And I think that will dictate on the time and effort you have to spend toward your finances.
Well, you have founded the National Financial Educators Council really to help, right? Help all of us become more financially literate. I'd love to know a little bit more about your personal story and what motivated you to create an organization that's really, you know, leading the charge to help us all become more financially literate.
Yeah, I've always had an interest in money, finance, and I've always wanted to be taught in school. And I spent 15 years of financial services because I enjoyed, you know, talking with people about my early successes before I had some trouble. You know, I enjoyed that, right? And I saw in financial services, I was often putting a Band-Aid on people as opposed to really helping them from the ground up, right? I'd get them in a good financial situation. They'd come back in a bad situation 5, 6, 8 months later. So, you know, just sad. I would get super excited for my clients, you know, I'm thinking, okay, hey, they're saving extra $2,000 a month. They're in great shape, no debt. You know, they can, if they put this into investments, they're going to be in really great shape in 5, 10 years. And it just that dream I had for them didn't work. So it was frustrating to me toward the end. And I founded, my mom reminded me of my interest in this. When I visited her, I just was kind of going, I need to find something else. And she reminded me of that. And from that day on, the NFEC was born. We branded a few times early on, but initially we were boots on the ground doing financial education programs, partnered with a lot of celebrities, sports stars, doing these bigger events and venues. And then it came to a point to where we want to scale. And now we really shifted from that boots on the ground organization to training and empowering those in local communities so they can lead local community financial education programming. And that's where we're at today. And you know, it's nice. I do miss being in front of educating teens and so forth. I do that a few times a year only now, so I miss that immensely. But I am very fulfilled seeing, hey, what our community champions are doing in every 50 states and actually in 60 plus countries too. So it's exciting. And that's where the future of we're heading. We're opening our state chapters. We launched our fourth one yesterday and coming up on our fifth one here in a week. So, but yeah, that's kind of our vision moving forward. We just want to make sure that communities have access to quality programming. They have people in there that can lead that and direct that and scale that. So it's not just serving one generation, it's building something for the future.
So is this education that, anybody could get, not just, teens or people, high school ages, if somebody's in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and they're still feeling this lack of education and wanting to know more, are these resources that they can tap into?
Yeah. So if they're looking to learn about personal finance, they can, we can connect them with our certified financial education instructors and our certified coaches. The instructors are teaching groups, Zoom, in person, and so forth. Our coaches are working one-on-one with people. And they're really leading the consumer education piece. And we can direct you there. But for those that have a passion for bringing that to the community, we provide the training, the resources, the support, the funding materials, really everything needed to scale and build a financial wellness program to them. And there's no restriction. We don't require any college degree or anything of that nature. Hey, we want to make sure you have a passion. This is something you're an advocate for, you're committed toward. And then we support you the best way we can and really, filling in those places so you don't have to reinvent the wheel and you have a system to do so. So that's really our focus now. And again, I think my passion, I still love teaching teens and so forth. But I get an equal amount, of fulfillment when I see what they're doing with teens and young adults and kids and adults as well. So, it's changed a bit. I'm not boots on the ground like you are. I do miss that. But being on shows like yours, it does fill that niche for me quite nicely as well.
Well, I love that you share the same passion and enthusiasm that I do for financial literacy, because I struggled when I was a practicing certified financial planner, just struggling with, really wanting to help people create change and it not happening. And just, something has to change. And then, going to the college that I worked at and, speaking to those students and just, I don't know, I feel this, just this burning desire like you have that this is so critically important and it can change people's lives. It can change communities. It can change, generations to come. And we really need more people that understand financial literacy. And so, I love what you're up to. Thinking about everything that we talked about, if you could write us a little like prescription, for becoming financially literate and really just not letting money ruin our lives, what are one or two things you would tell us that we just need to remember?
Yeah, I'd say, if I'll do a timeline order, as a kid, hey, focus on yourself, skills, and creating positive behaviors. Don't believe the hype of the advertisers and social media. Find good quality role models that you want to emulate that are in fields you enjoy. As teens, hey, don't mess up, right? Get prepared for what's coming. Also, there's risk out there that are new today. So, make sure you're doing things right. Don't get caught up in bad things. And prepare for that next stage. When you first get out on your own, try to avoid mistakes. They will happen. You will make mistakes. Most people do, unless you're very fortunate and lucky. With the knowledge, there's things that come up. You may look back, be like, hey, that was a mistake. Build your resiliency. Keep working toward those goals. Establish a plan early. And again, just focus on the basics. Hey, how can you continue to gain skill sets to earn more? How can you continue to reduce your overhead so your margins and what you're able to save for savings is bigger? So that's a prescription from ages 3 to 88. There you go.
It is so sad to me that States that are requiring financial literacy are failing to even meet the minimum education requirements of other subjects. It just, you know, Vince is like boots on the ground with financial literacy. And this just doesn't say a lot about how we value learning about money at all. And it's crazy to me because money is such an integral part of living life. But you can change that by getting financially literate yourself and passing along what you know. I think of it like if we're in a giant line at your favorite coffee shop and we're all buying the person behind us a coffee. It's our responsibility to learn about money and to pass it along. So if you want to learn more about Vince and the National Financial Educators Council, you can head to financialeducatorscouncil.org or just head right to the show notes. The link will be right there. As always, I want to thank my sponsors who help make this show possible. Go over, give them some love. You'll find all their links in the show notes, as well as everything else we talked about on this episode. Thank you so much. If you've not done so already, I would really appreciate it if you'd leave a review for the show. You can head on over to the link in the show notes or Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you're listening to this episode in. I will see you right back here, my friends, in a few days for a brand new episode.